Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today I have a great guest on. He actually is a filmmaker, but what we're going to be talking about is something that is not heard of a lot, and people are just now finding out about it. His name is Keith. So, Keith, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you, Nancy.
Now, Keith, I was looking at the website for your film and everything, and this is absolutely extraordinary. So, but before we talk about your film, I'd like to talk about you a little bit with who Keith is, what got you into filmmaking, and, you know, what draws you to this place in Italy.
Well, I've been a photographer, for about 30 years, and have done a lot of traveling, and over the years, the idea of artistic communities has always fascinated me. And I was making a documentary in Mexico, and somebody mentioned this place in Italy where there was underground temples and this community of people and alchemy and metaphysics. And it really fascinated me. And I thought, well, why don't I, you know, see if I can go over there and film? And I was in Europe making, again, another film, and I started to contact the Dominurian people, asking them if I could come and see their art, because these temples are beautifully adorned with art. And I'd seen some of the pictures. I was there 2 months, and the last day before I was to leave, they finally said, okay, come visit. So I went there, and I was only there for a few days, but as soon as I landed in Dominor, in the village, I realized that the story wasn't about the art. It was about this incredible community of people and what they'd accomplished. So I kind of, like I say, I spent a couple days there, and when I was leaving, the international ambassador for Dominor, for the Federation, just happened to walk by, and we introduced ourselves, and she realized I was a filmmaker, and she said, would you like to make a film about Dominor? We have yet to have one done. We've been very reluctant to having any done, but we feel it's time, and we're kind of choosing you. So for a journalist or a filmmaker or a writer, you know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunity to have this almost unknown group of people and this civilization they've created, and have open access to everything. She told me, she said, we can give you anything archival that you want, any photographs, you can do interviews, you can go anywhere, do anything you want, and we want to have no editorial input at all, no control, we don't want to even see it until it's done. So it, for me, it was just wow, and the press has stopped for me. Everything went into this Dominor project, and it consumed many years. I went back to Italy 5 times to keep filming and keep researching this place.
On the website, Keith, give out the website that you sent to me.
And my last name is Bouchard. I know it's weird to pronounce, but it's Keith Bouchard. And the website, as is the name of the film, is Dreams of Dominor. So it's all one word. It's dreamofdamanhur.com. And if you forget that, you can go to Google or Wikipedia and put in Dominor, and it will route you to probably their website first, but look under film, and this film will pop up. There's also a Dominor in Egypt. That's a different Dominor, although they are connected. But this one is
okay.
In Italy.
This one's in Italy. So when you first went there, were you expecting to find what you found?
Not at all. I really went there. I'd read a little bit about them, and what I read seemed really far out to me at the time, because they were doing things with time travel and alchemy. And in the past, I've known groups that were involved in that, and honestly, I didn't really think there was a whole lot of credibility in the few groups that I knew of. So I went kind of thinking that, well, they're doing this, that's great, but I really just want to see their art. And then everything changed for me when I was there. And as I went back, my mind really opened up to what they're doing, because these aren't people that just talk about things. These are people that actually do it. They get their hands dirty, and they create an economic model to support this incredible civilization. So, no, I was blown away. I had no idea that anything like this existed on Earth, and I had no idea that any community like this, an intentional community that had its own government and in their own language, their own currency, their own businesses, existed for 35 years. I didn't know that there were any. So no, I wasn't prepared at all. And then the more I started to get into the spiritual aspect of Daman Hor, that really opened my eyes too, because I was hearing things that I kind of deep down fundamentally believed, but I'd never really heard articulated, you know, as well as I heard at Daman Hor. And this is not a religious group at all. I want to be clear. It's a philosophical group that do research, but there's no dogma or set religious belief. There's no book that tells you how to think, and there's no leader that tells you what to believe or anything of that sort. They're open. They want to evolve, which I find really refreshing. And they just want to research different aspects of life to see what works. So, no, to answer your question, I really wasn't prepared.
I mean, I looked at the trailer that you have mm-hmm. on this website, mm-hmm. and it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, and it's like hard to believe that this has been kept a secret for so long, and, yeah. and that they were even able to do it, because, you know, your pictures show the subterranean, you know, mm-hmm. temples under there. So maybe explain to the listeners a little bit about when you walked in to those temples, mm-hmm. how you felt.
Okay. The temples are about 150 feet underground, and they were started about 30 years ago, just to give you a little history, by a very small group with primitive tools, picks and shovels. The very end, they got a pneumatic drill, but it was basically picks and shovels and buckets carrying rock out. So the temple complex is the size of a football field, broken up into different rooms, and it's 150 feet underground, and every wall is covered with a mural or a mosaic or a fresco, and the artwork is there to adorn the temples, but it's also there to keep kind of the history of humankind. There's their language, which they've created, is all over the walls. So the temple complex tells a story. And you're kind of, they explain that before you go into the temples, that it is in a kind of a linear story as you walk through. But being underground is a sensation all of its own. I don't know if you've ever been in a cave or anything like that, but usually it's very uncomfortable and not much airflow and kind of heavy feeling. Their temples aren't that way at all. They've devised some way to get a really good airflow naturally flowing through, and they're very well lit, although it's all artificial light. Now, as far as how I felt, it depends. I've been in there many, many times, and I felt differently at different times. I've gone in there and felt absolutely overwhelmed by all the art, the stimuli, and this incredible work that the craftsmanship is phenomenal. And other times I've gone in there and felt absolutely exhausted and kind of an oppressive feel. I brought one of our crew down to do some filming, and he's a big burly guy and scared of nothing kind of guy, man's man. And he went down in there, and I didn't see him for about 10 minutes, and I went to find him, and he was sitting in a corner crying. And he said, "I can't be here." He said, "This is too much. I've just got to get out of here." So I think the effect is very different with different people and different at different times, possibly in your life, because there's a lot going on down there. And then you have to try to grasp the fact that basically 30 people with picks and shovels dug in secret, in the dark most of the time, for 30-some years to create these temples. And there's no sign of it on the outside at all. There's a very modest little entrance. It just looks like a door to a shack. And they did this. They accomplished this. And you look at it and you go, you know, this is something that you would think would take, you know, 100 years for a small group or thousands of people and heavy equipment. But it's not. It was done by, like I say, just a few people and in a relatively short amount of time. And it's unbelievable. It just doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. But it's what it is, and it's the reality.
Now, did you talk with those people while you were there to ask them about their time travel and their associations possibly with aliens?
Sure. I've had a lot of conversations with them about it. Some of the things that they work on, they keep very close. They don't talk about too much. And I think the problem is, there's two problems being a non-Italian speaker. One is that most of them speak Italian in their own language, but don't speak English. So that's difficult. The translation is difficult. And the other is that they are into very advanced experiments, and it's kind of like going into a university when you go in and go and talk with physicists. They speak their own language. The physicists have their own way of talking, or an engineer has their own vocabulary. Well, the Dominarians do too, and it's hard for them sometimes to answer very basic questions. But I know the time travel is an ongoing experiment. They've kept very careful logs of it. They share that information with other people that are particularly interested in it, but they don't really advertise it. And I think it's safe to say that for the most part, their time travel hasn't been particularly exciting in the sense that they don't wind up, you know, with famous people in famous places. They wind up, you know, on a hillside somewhere. They wind up just with ordinary people by a creek. So not that much happens sometimes in their time travel experiments. And also, they have different ways of time traveling. They have two that I understand. One is a hypnotic state that they have worked on that allows them to travel. The other is a physical time travel. And they say that form of time travel that they worked on is very, very dangerous, very hard to control. And they think up till now they've been extremely lucky that no one has been harmed. And the last time I was there, they said basically that they were going to really ease away from it for a while because they just think it's too dangerous for the people involved. So I don't, as of today, I don't know what's going on there, but they are involved in other kinds of temporal satellite programs and a lot of alien communication work, which if you go to their website, they have a university along with their other school systems, and they teach classes in communicating with other forms of intelligence, and alien being one of them.
Do you know what their website is?
They have a number of them. The best one to go to is just dominhor.org.
Okay.
And then that will bring you to their English website. And from there, you can look into a lot of different aspects of their culture if you're interested. But if you go to dominhor, let me spell it again to you because it's an odd word. It's D-A-M-A-N-H-U-R org.
.org. Okay. Yes. And now, it was put together by, like you said, a very small group of people. Were they scientists? Were they ordinary, everyday people who just came up with an idea? You know, what kind of people were they that put this together?
Dreamers. None of them had backgrounds in any of the things that they went on to work in. For instance, the woman who did some of the outstanding stained glass work inside the temples was a plumber in her other life. There was one visionary person. His name is Alberto Araudi, and he goes by the name of Falco. And this was the temples were his dream, as was the community. Very unusual character, very soft-spoken, shy, does not want to be in the spotlight in any respect. But it was his vision, and how things work there is Falco will go to someone and say, I'd like you to research this. Let's say it's a new diagnostic testing technique. And that person will start to research it, and he'll get the resources of the community behind him to do it. And then Falco will check in occasionally to see how the research is going. That's kind of how the temples were done. The small group, he said, I want to dig this temple complex. And then he just kind of saw this in his head and kept telling people, no, we're going to do it here, and we're going to go in, 100 feet this way, and then we're going to dig this temple. He had no background in any of this. He was, in his earlier years, he was an insurance agent, the youngest insurance agent in Italy. And then he became a prana healer and set up centers in Italy called the Horus Centers that studied metaphysics and also different forms of healing. But these people are all self-taught. But what's amazing is, say, in their science, they're very, very active in science, both alchemic and also standard science. What's interesting is they have all these international patents on science patents on machines that they've created, diagnostic testing. This machine that allows you to play music with plants, forms of energy. So they have gotten very sophisticated in their science research to the point that universities in Italy often will come to Domenhur to see the results of their experiments, sometimes because the universities don't have the advanced equipment that the Domenhur has. Like they're raising beef cells at Domenhur. This has been something I've been working on for probably 10 years, and it involves very expensive scaffolding equipment, and it's the only place, I believe, in the world where they're actually creating meat cells without cloning. And this is a patented process that they've developed. So to answer your question, they didn't have backgrounds in these things, but they went on to teach themselves.
Could it be possible, Keith, that possibly Falco could have been from a different planet, a different, time frame, because normally people, even when they have a dream, they don't quite get their vision conquered, nor do they usually get it finished without some other kind of whole bunch of help. But it doesn't sound like that's what this group did. It sounded like he started it. And, if he's never been trained in any of this stuff, but he still had the knowledge, it's very hard for most people to learn almost anything, really, unless they're really into it. Is there a possibility, because of this alien contact that they do and the metaphysical part and the paranormal and all that, that maybe he could be a hybrid, a cross between an alien and a human?
Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no doubt, as far as I'm concerned. He's not a person of this earth that I have ever been around. He gets his guidance, and if you want to use the word channels it, whatever word you want to use, he gets it from the cosmos. And his mind, I've never been around a mind like his. I mean, he can talk physics with the top physicists in the world. They come there and have these conferences. And this, again, is self-taught. The Dominorians believe that Alberto comes from the future. And I've never really talked with them about this, but this is their belief, that he comes from about 600 years in the future. And why he's here, I don't know. What's the end game? What's the master plan? Very complicated. But in my movie, they explain it to an extent, the why of why they built these temples, why they built this community, why they have their own language. And I couldn't really even begin to paraphrase it or explain it as well as they do. But yeah, I don't believe he's a regular Earth person. I say in the movie, I wonder if he bleeds. And I'm sure he does bleed, but there's something there that I've just never been around a person like this. He's self-possessed in the sense that he seems to know exactly what he's doing. There's no question in his mind what he's doing. Like he's done it before. You know, you get that kind of feeling. Probably many times.
See, as I look at the information that I got from you, my first thought was that he has probably been here several times, hundreds of thousands of years ago. And he's here now because we're in pretty deep doo-doo on this Earth as far as killing the planet, you know, poisoning the people, doing all the things that we really shouldn't be doing.
Right.
And in some kind of a movement for him, especially, because he wants to do sustainable villages that are you know, eco-safe with the Earth is what I'm picking up.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for him to do that, and do it the way he has done it, I would tend to believe that this man has got to have been on this planet several other times from other places and is sent here especially for this purpose, to see if it's all possible to do stuff like this on Earth and help the human race. Not that they're going to save us, because believe me, the only one that's going to save us is ourselves, but show us a way where we can sustain ourselves, because we need sustainable communities, and they need to be eco-safe.
Right.
And yet, you know, there's a lot of people that are trying to do it, but there's not a lot of people that are successful with it, with this kind of knowledge and this kind of, you know, technique, let alone all the scientific stuff that, you know, you've already said, most PhD people look at them and go, how do you know that?
Yeah.
You know, so that's how the energy that I get from what you sent to me, because that's the only thing that would really make sense. And for him not to want to be in the limelight would make even more sense, because if he were in the limelight, his whole probably history of trying to do what he's doing would probably not get done. It would have been stopped by somebody.
Well, the Catholic Church has been their foe for, 20 years. The Catholic Church absolutely hates everything about Dominor because basically they're not Catholic. And they also have a lot of pagan beliefs. He, I believe, is too busy for notoriety. He's got work to do. He's constantly working, as is everybody at Dominor. He just, I've asked him about, you know, do you want to be seen as a guru? And he says, absolutely not. You know, everybody's their own guru, and it's the last thing that he wants to be associated with. But I think with Dominor, he wants to show that the seemingly impossible is possible, and we're only limited by our minds. And that's what they've done over and over again in terms of building their community and their civilization there. Just a small thing like creating your own language. I mean, it's not a small thing, but it sounds relatively small. I mean, think about it. This is the only language that's been created on Earth probably in hundreds of years.
Right.
The only new language. And this small group of people did it while they're digging temples, while they're building this community, while they're setting up their own school systems. And they're almost completely energy self-sufficient. They're agriculturally self-sufficient. They are, you know, off the grid. They're doing it. Again, it's not talk with them. They've done it. And it's thriving. They've had ups and downs. I mean, it all hasn't been rosy, but they're very resilient. You know, they bounce back. When something doesn't work, they get rid of it and they move on. But they want to show that a community can work, but they, I think, come from the point of view of, rather than try to fix what's here, let's start all over. Let's start from the beginning.
Which would make perfect sense.
It's too much of a mess to fix.
Yeah.
It's too much of a mess to even understand.
And that's being kind, Keith. That's being kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I sit here and I watch what's going on in the world, and it's like, folks, you've got to be kidding me. What do you not get about what we need to do? But many folks don't, you know. And so I found this very fascinating. And then when I was looking again at your film, by the way, before you go further, let people know how they can get your film.
Sure. Right now, the only way to get it is through my website, dreamsofdominhor.com. And that's in the DVD form. Within about 2 weeks, it will be streamed on Amazon and some other places. So if you don't want to buy the DVD, you'll be able to watch the film for a few dollars. It's another option. But it's the kind of film I keep hearing that people want to watch over and over again, because it's a lot to take in an hour. It was originally done for television, so I've crammed a lot of material into 1 hour. But right now, it's just go onto my website, and you'll see the option there to buy the DVD. And
so,
it's in English, and it's in high def.
Okay, good. Good, it's in English, let me tell you. Now, there on the website, you say there's about 1,000 citizens there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but many thousands associates around the world.
Yeah.
So is this village that he has done, has he basically shown other people in other places how to duplicate what they have done as far as the sustainable living condition?
He's been very clear that he does not want people to come and duplicate what he's done. He wants people to come and see what they've done and then process that and go do what they have to do. So in a sense, it's a model, and they give classes, and the UN has given them an award for the most sustainable community, self-sustaining community in the world. They're starting to get a lot of recognition for this community they've created. But he says it's not enough to model something. A lot of things need to be taken into account to create a civilization or a community like this. And just come there and think about what they've done and then apply it, but don't try to model Dominhor, because Dominhor is created for Dominhorians, for this group that has a particular interest and a particular, I guess you could say, goal or program or whatever. But they give classes on how to build communities, and they're very popular, too. I've attended some of these lectures and these classes, because they've learned a lot over the years. And as far as I know, they're the only one. Finhorn is around, but Finhorn doesn't begin to get into so many aspects of life as Dominhor. Plus, it's much smaller. So I don't know of another group like this that has created a civilization from the ground up in 3 decades.
The underground, because they have the farms, they're all above the ground,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the underground temples, are those open for people also to visit, or is it just to visit the village?
You can drop into the village anytime and go to their workshops, and you can come there and take classes. You can come and just enjoy the area. To go to the temples, it's open to the public, but they would like to give you classes before you go into the temples so you understand what you're about to see. It's not a kind of thing where you just show up and, you know, put a dollar in a meter and go and walk around the temples. You're guided through there, and they have 1 and 3 day classes to kind of prepare you for going in. And you learn a little bit about their language and their philosophy. You learn about like I was saying, the fact that it's a story, in a sense, the temples, a linear story. So they prepare you for it, and I don't know what the cost is right now, but there's definitely a fee. And there's a fee to stay there, but it's pretty modest. And then a lot of people go that are interested will go and spend months there and go to what they call the School of Meditation or some of their other schools, and will really get deeply into what Domino is all about. Like, for instance, to them, meditation, I think of meditation as being quiet and still and stopping your mind. And to them, it's working on the work that you need to be doing. It's not being still, it's being active and creating, because it is an artistic community, but it's also a very practical community, and that's why these people are constantly in motion. They're just always working, and they don't take vacations. They don't seem to want to, because I've asked them that many times. They exhaust me when I'm with them, and I say, God, wouldn't you like to take a break and, you know, go to the lake? And no, why? Why would we want to do that? They can't even understand the concept. They feel the work they're doing is so important and valuable that they can't miss a beat. They have no time to, you know, for frivolous stuff. Not that they're not fun-loving, because they are, but their work is there, and that's what they want to be doing. And that's how they see meditation, as being right in the zone where you know what you're doing is the right thing, and you're doing it.
But see, a lot of people would find that better than trying to sit and quiet your mind, because there's so many people who cannot get their minds quieted because they're just too busy with, you know, here, there, and everywhere. So the movement meditation, I think, at least in my opinion, actually is a better way to do things, because you can be very creative. That's like when Michael Jordan was at the top, he always talked about being in his zone.
Yeah.
Well, he was only in his zone when he's playing.
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, it can work, but people need to be taught a little differently than what we have been taught, because I think what we have been taught is based upon a lot of old stuff, mm-hmm. and it's time for the new stuff to come in, and this would be one of it, you know, one of the things, because it's very, very fascinating. So give out the website again, and anybody who's listening, please go to this website right now while we're talking, and you'll see why I'm very interested in this.
Yes, and the website, I'll just tell you, has photographs, and you can see and hear examples of their language and their music, and see pictures of inside the temples, etc. It's Dreams, DREAMS. Of, O-F, Damanhur, damanhur.com. And that will lead you to, also, on my website, I've got some links, and one link is to a writer named Ross Robertson, who wrote a magazine article about Damanhur that is pretty dead on, a wonderful writer, and there's a link there to go to his article. I forget what magazine it was, Enlightenment, possibly, that he wrote for. And he does a really, really good job of writing an objective article.
Yeah, I think people that go there to the website will find it very, very fascinating. I have not looked at the one that you just gave for their own, but I will take a look at that.
Yeah, he did a good job.
You know, because anything that's dealing with aliens, quantum physics, mm-hmm. paranormal and metaphysical research is right up my alley.
Okay, well, you should go to Dominor. You should get on a plane and go to Dominor.
It's right up my alley. In fact, what I was going to do, Keith, I'm going to check out their site to see what they do about their schools. Because
their
that
schools
one...
are...
Go ahead.
Wonderful. Well, I'm just... Their school... I would like to do a whole show just on their school system. Because they have a phenomenal school system for young kids, like equivalent to an elementary school. It's just amazing. It starts at 6 months old. They start sending the kids to school. And it's just, actually, it would take me a whole hour to talk about it, but it was so refreshing to go to the classrooms and see what these kids are doing. And then at about eighth grade, they have the Dominorian kids. They like them to go out to public schools for a couple years just so they can see what that's like. And then generally they go to universities in Italy and come back to Dominor. Is what I've seen with most of the kids. But they have the school system for the kids, and then they have the university, which is open to everybody, and much of it's free. So you can read about that on their website. They go into length about the different school systems they have. But I would have loved to have been a young boy going to their school system. Fantastic.
Yeah, I would be interested in their school system because that's what I moved to New Mexico to do.
Mm.
I actually moved to New Mexico with one purpose in mind. That was to find land, find funding, build a school that I want, called the School of Now, open it and run it. And
good
I got
luck on
20,
that.
Well, I got 22.59 acres of land donated for that purpose. Now it's just raising the rest of the money. But it's a whole different system. Not like we know here because the system is failing. It's not that the students are failing. The schools are failing. And so it's a whole different system. So anytime I hear about a different kind of system, school system, I got to look into that because it just, you know, it needs to be done. And it needs to be done here in the United States very badly.
Yes,
You know, so that was one of the things I noticed on here. You also talk about how they live in group houses.
Yes. I would say their system is more like a Steiner system. More Waldorfian, but also unique to them. How they've chosen to live is pretty interesting. They live in groups they call nucleos, and nucleos are usually about 15 or 20 people, and they have their own house, and the houses are beautiful. These aren't little you know shacks or rustic you know houses. They're gorgeous, totally energy. Self-sufficient energy-wise, very high-tech. And 15, 20 people live in a nucleo. And they're all different ages. And each nucleo has responsibility of a certain research project. Say in one it might be making cheese, and another it might be agriculturally based, and another it might be scientifically based, and another it might have to do with community building and sustainable communities. So there are probably, I would guess, 40, 50 nucleos, I'm not sure. And they live there, and they work on this research project, but also they do whatever other work it is they have to do. And they save Sunday afternoons to be a day for the nucleo to get together and talk about what's going on with them as a whole, and deal with any problems that come up or kind of plan their next, their future, so to speak. People will move from nucleo to nucleo. Some do, some don't. Sometimes children decide to, instead of just staying with their parents, they decide they want to go live with another nucleo for a while. And that's fine. Actually, the kids form their own nucleo. These would be kids high school age, I guess, here. And they created their own to see if they could govern themselves. and they did great. They did great. Their grades actually improved when they had their own nucleo. But it's a small living group, and it's very democratically set up. There's a head of the nucleo, and that's something they vote on, and I think that changes every year or something. Some people are married, some aren't married. They have a few different forms of marriage, too. One of them that's very popular is this, it's, I forget what they call it, but it's a marriage vow, but it comes up for renewal. So after a couple of years, you look at your past and you go, God, is this really working? Is this what we expected? Is this what we want it to be? Are we better off staying together, or are we better off going back to being friends? And I think that's pretty refreshing. And it seems to work really well. Many people, I've talked to many people there that were married, and they decided that it wasn't the right thing for them right then. But they seem to be wonderful as friends. Interesting. But this, again, is they're always experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
They're always looking.
But to me, that's actually the right way to do it.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, is to see after a couple of years. I mean, here, they make it very easy for somebody to get married, and they make it really horribly hard for somebody to get divorced, and very expensive, which makes absolutely no sense to me, okay?
Yeah, the resources married couples have go to the lawyers.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
You know, and it makes no sense. So to me, again, this would be a progressive way of living versus what we know or what we keep doing over and over again with the same results. So we must be insane to keep doing it, but we do.
Sure.
You know, so this is very, very refreshing. Now, I'm going to attempt to play this plant music.
Ooh,
and when I'm done, I want you to explain it, okay?
Okay, good deal.
So let's see if I can do it, because I didn't send it to them because I didn't have enough time. But here. So I hope everybody heard that. So, now, can you explain that, what they just heard?
I sure can. Not exactly a catchy tune, but I can't tell you the feeling of being able to sit with a plant and with this device they have, actually play music and interact with plants. I've sat and played the guitar, and I've played the piano with plants, and I've listened to their concerts, and it is absolutely eerie to sit and play notes to a plant and have the plant play the notes back to you, or play notes that correspond back to you. It's a very strange sensation. And then you start thinking, well, if this plant is playing these notes that are the same notes that I'm playing or similar, how is it hearing them? Okay, well, that's easy to explain. They're vibrations. But what device in the plant is analyzing it? And then, isn't it interesting this plant wants to do this? They want to play music. And I've heard the plants. I was one day filming, and there was a fella inside the house that was very loud and aggressive. He was a journalist from somewhere, and he was kind of inside yakking away. And then he came out to take photographs of the plant machine, plant music machine. And we'd been talking, and the plan had been making some music similar to what you just heard. And as soon as he walked outside, the plant shut up, stopped. And I had this all on tape, and I didn't realize it till afterwards when I looked at the tape. The plant didn't make a peep until he went back into the house. The door was shut. Then it started making music again. It just didn't like his energy, whatever you want to call it. The plant didn't care for it and shut up. And I, in the film, actually, I had experience. It was the first time I had filmed the plant making music with me. Interacting with me, because before it had just been off camera. And this time we had a lot of people around. We had lights and cameras, and we had all this stuff. And the plant hardly made a peep. Just didn't want to play. Didn't like it. So again, we shut off the cameras and the lights for a little while, and then the plant came back and played a little bit. But what this is a machine they've created, and they have about 50 different patents on this machine for different uses. The patent also allows plants to do jobs in their greenhouse. The plant opens, turns on the vents, turns on the heat, waters. It tells when it wants to be watered, etc. And they've got a lot of uses for this machine coming up that they've worked on. But it's a machine that one electrode attaches to the leaf and one to the root of the plant. And then it somehow analyzes the electric impulses, I guess you could say, of the plant. And then you hook that up to a synthesizer, and it will make whatever kind of sounds you want it to make. They give concerts with many plants. They give concerts with musicians on stage playing with different plants. They have an ongoing concert that they do at the Botanical Gardens in Turin. That's just amazing to watch, because they'll use trees, and they'll use little house plants and vegetables, and they're all playing this music together. And again, as far as I know, there's nothing. I mean, they have all the international patents on this, but I don't know of anything else like this in the world.
It's kind of neat. You know how people say it's nice to talk to your plants?
Yeah.
They like to listen to music. But that's just kind of a thing that makes sure that people really do know that. Because, you know, and I hope everybody heard it. I turned it up as loud as I could. But to me, that's fascinating, because there's always communication going on. Doesn't mean that if you're a plant, you're not communicating. Just like if you're an animal, because you can't talk, you're not communicating.
Right, right. Well, I think what's pretty clear to people that work in these kind of fields is that there are a lot of forms of intelligent energy buzzing around us, whether it be plant or animal or in whatever form, wavelengths of light, that we don't even know they're there, let alone know how to interpret them. And it's fascinating research, and it can't be anything but a win for humans to start to become more aware of all this intelligence out there. But usually in the franticness of our lives, we don't take the time. Or maybe we just don't even believe it's there, because we've kind of lost the belief that the magic's possible anymore. We're so busy, you know, just trying to get by and make sense of this crazy world and this bizarre time that we live in, that we don't make room for magic anymore.
Yeah.
Where it used to be the guiding light.
But see, in reality, it still is. But you're right,
so.
People have lost it. We're not really taught that anymore. We're taught to live in fear. We're taught to be a victim. And as soon as people stop living in fear, and I know it's scary, but as soon as they stop living in fear and stop being a victim, they can then relearn what their true natural heart and soul is supposed to be doing. But they're not doing that. So a lot of changes have to occur, and places like this is one of the best ways to show people that it's still there, it's still possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really hope that a lot of people go to the website. I hope they buy your film because, I looked at it. It's fascinating. The artwork that's done, you know, inside those temples is absolutely beautiful. And then they've done sculptures. They've done all kinds of stuff that you just wouldn't, you know, think it's down there someplace hidden and nobody's ever found it, you know?
Right. Yeah, and what's funny there, too, is things happen in a very magical sense. For instance, I was telling you how busy everybody seems to be. Well, they were telling me about a greenhouse project that they were working on, and I went out and shot a little video at this greenhouse when it was just bare land, and then I went back every couple days, and every couple days I'd go back, and I'd never see anybody there working, but there was more greenhouse built. And then by the end of maybe 5 or 6 days, I went back and this whole complex was finished, but I never saw anybody working on it. And it was like, I couldn't put together how this happened. I mean, did they work in the middle of the night? There's so many things that I, you know, even after all the research I've done and the times I've been there, I just don't understand. So I'm keeping my eyes really glued to Dahmenhor. Because it's just constant surprises there, and they're onto something very, very real. They're the real thing. They're genuine.
See, again, that's real important too, because you meet many, many not genuine people.
Yeah,
and so that's real important. No, like I said, I really hope that people go look at this website, plus their website too. You know, because there's such beautiful pictures on there between their artwork, just their plants, the sculptures that they have, you know, that you've done on the site, the pictures. They're absolutely beautiful.
Great. Well, we'll keep adding to that, and I'm hoping to do another video on more about Falco, because I've had some long talks with him, and he's a fascinating person to interview. He's so profound. So I'm hoping to do that, and I'll make that available on the website as well. And like I say, I hope to get this streaming up soon too. But yeah, it's beautiful stuff.
When you talk with him, mm-hmm. See if I could interview him. I'd love to speak with him.
Do you speak Italian at all?
No, I'll get an interpreter if I have to.
You would have to. He's really funny. He will not speak anything but Italian, although he speaks English, but he won't speak
mm-hmm.
it.
Okay.
And he understands everything you're saying in English, but he wants it translated for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never understood why, what that's about, but it's just the way he is. He's very hard to pin down. He's extremely busy, and usually scheduling, you know, even an hour or half hour with him takes a week or so. For him to find the time. And then you get the feeling that he's kind of antsy. He wants to, you know, he wants to get out of there. He's not really comfortable. He's very relaxed in one sense, but the other sense, you always feel like his mind's somewhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it probably is between two worlds.
Sure. You bet.
You know.
You bet.
So, I mean, to me, he would probably be living what we would consider the fifth dimension that we haven't really reached yet here. But that's, you know, where you're pretty high up and you have all this other info coming in, you know, through your heart, basically. And people call it conscious mind, but it's not. But
yeah.
It's through your heart. And so you're kind of like not grounded, as we call it here, and you're kind of like way out there. But those are the kind of people that really will make a difference in this world.
Yes, yes. I mean, it takes that kind of focus. Yeah, to do anything in life of meaning. Yeah, that's the thing there. There's not a lot of frivolous energy at Dahmenhor. It's all extremely focused. And I've got to say, too, intelligent. I mean, I go there, and I feel like the dumbest person at the party. I mean, they're talking about things that are so advanced. And, you know, usually I think I can kind of follow what people are talking about, but I'm at Dahmenhor, and boy, it's just over my head. What they're just so bright and innovative, and talking about things that you just don't normally. I mean, talking about quantum physics while you're eating lasagna, is a little different for most people.
Yes.
Different dinners than I usually have. But that's very common there. I mean, that's what interests them, is real stuff. Yeah.
You know, Keith, our time is up. It flew by real quick.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Me too, but we'll have you come back again.
Great.
You know,
great.
When you get some more stuff done, just let me know. We'll have you come back again. But thank you for bringing it, to my attention, and so I can bring it out to other people's attention. I think it's absolutely wonderful.
Yes, and I have to say, I'm not a real promoter type of person, and if your viewers feel like it, it'd be great if they enjoy what they see to pass it on, like via Facebook or something.
Mm-hmm.
Tell your friends, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, just pass it on. Tell
pass
10,
on.
Let them tell 10. That would be good. But I would like to thank you for taking some time to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Nancy.
And you take care. We'll talk again. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. And please don't forget about the Wake Up Now conference that I am hosting to help raise money to build my school. It is in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area, April 29th through May 1st. Go to www.wakeupnowconference.com and hear all about it. And I'd like to thank all of you. Have a great day and take care. Bye now.